Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. And we have a minute. I think we're going to let you listen to one more message before we get to Tori and Alon with the bike show and guests.
International Women's Day this Sunday for live music from the KABU studios from 7 to 10 p.m. Shirley Certain and Just Jess will host Annie Dang, Rachel Taylor Brown, and Butterfly Breakdown, as well as some recordings from the KABU live music archive. At 7 p.m. this Sunday for International Women's Day.
Shake, 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 shake. Come on now and move your hips in. Shake, 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 shake.
As citizens of a so-called democratic society, we need to have information that ranges from A to Z, not what we have, which is A to B.
KABU is proud to present An Evening with David Barsamian, Wednesday, March 4th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. All proceeds will benefit KABU Community Radio. One of America's most tireless and wide-ranging investigative journalists, David Barsamian is the host of Alternative Radio. Again, that's An Evening with David Barsamian, Wednesday, March 4th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, I'm Tori Bortman, welcoming you to the KABU Bike Show. Also, a good morning to my co-host, Alon Robb.
Good morning.
Today, we're looking towards spring. The sun is shining, the skies are unusually blue, and it's time to start thinking about getting out on your own bike or even giving it some love. There's a need in Portland and beyond for great access to bikes. Sometimes it's making a safe space for them to be on the road or for fitness or to help people get to their jobs. Others, it's more times, it's more opportunities to ride in the dirt within the city limits. But no matter what, one thing all riders have in common is a need to actually take care of their bikes. In the first half of our show today, we're joined by Momoko Saunders and Diana Holland of the Bike Farm, a community space where you can repair your own bike.
Later in the show, I'll be turning the tables on my co-host, Tori Bortman, to ask for expert advice on the best way to get your bicycle ready to ride in our beautiful early spring weather. If you have questions on how to prepare your bicycle to ride this season, we'll be taking calls for Tori in the second half of the hour. And I'd also like to wish the listeners who celebrate the holiday of Purim, Chag Sameach, if you're cycling in Portland or in the ancient city of Shushan, happy holiday.
Happy holiday, everybody. The Bike Farm was created in 2007 to fill a need in Portland for bicycle education, from safe commuting to repair. The Bike Farm's mission is to provide a space where people can learn about the bicycle and build community around promoting sustainable transportation. They strive to demystify the bicycle in order to impact the city in a healthy and positive way. And over the years, they've been able to expand both their space and their programming. On our December 2009 show, Momoko Saunders, a longtime Bike Farm volunteer and co-founder of the Bike Farm, who now keeps the organization's finances in line, joined us. And as the analyst, her role at the farm is to crunch numbers and look at shop usage, fun stuff like that. She also advises the group on how to make solid financial decisions, such as moving or buying new tools. She's a dedicated volunteer for the Bike Farm's Women in Trans Night as well. Today, she's back to give us an update on how things have been growing at the Bike Farm. Diana Holland is the Bike Farm's current board president and is also here with us today to help round out the big picture of how the bike farm has grown, both itself and Portland's cycling community. Momoko Sunders and Diane Holland, thank you both so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, Diana, we'll start with you. For our listeners who aren't familiar with the Bike Farm, can you tell them a little bit about its origin story? Where did it come from?
Bike Farm was... Actually, Momoko could probably speak to this a little bit better.
Momoko Sunders?
Sure. Bike Farm was founded in 2007, like you said. Ariel Raymond got together a bunch of friends to hash out this idea that she had seen in Santa Cruz at the bike church there. And so I was a good friend of Ariel, and she asked me to help her out with finding a space and the budget and the nonprofit paperwork. And so we met in September of 2007, and then by December we had gotten a space in a garage and gotten some tools and started helping people fix their bikes. And yeah, the idea is, was taken directly from the bike church in Santa Cruz.
And so can you describe a little bit more about the first programs you had, kind of how it got started? And I know you were in a different space than you are in now.
Yeah, the first space was a garage on 13th. And we had a touring workshop and Women in Trans Night. And I think those are the only two programs that we had when we first started. We also just had shop hours where we would help people fix their bikes.
And go ahead, Alana.
And were you yourself involved with bicycles before? What brought you and you as well to get involved with bicycles?
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed riding when I was younger. Used to go on really long bike rides to the neighboring cities. Kind of lost touch with that when I got a car and all that type of stuff. Went to college. And then got reintroduced to it when I went to Santa Cruz and started hanging out at the bike church.
And I rode a bike in San Diego, but I lived right next to a bike shop, and they kind of took care of me and fixed my bike whenever it needed fixing and told me I needed to inflate my tubes. But it wasn't until I got to Portland that someone actually at the Community Cycling Center, when I had a question, put a wrench in my hand and said, here, this is how you fix that, which was kind of revolutionary. And then a friend told me about Bike Farm, where I started to go, and that's where I learned to fix my first flat and lube my chain and do everything on my bike by myself. I thought it was a really cool idea.
And on your website, you talk about demystifying the bicycle. What do you mean by that exactly?
I think the bicycle is a very simple machine. And a lot of people, when something's clicking or making a noise or something that they don't understand, they're like, what's going on? I should take it somewhere and have them fix it for me. But at Bike Farm, we want to demystify the bike. We want to make people understand that it's not this crazy, mystical thing that no one can understand.
It's not something you actually have to plug into a computer to get a readout
no.
on what's wrong with it.
No, it's really simple, and you can do it yourself.
And you guys, what kind of tools are you offering exactly people to do it themselves?
Well, we have stands, which makes any repair a lot easier to be able to put your bike up. We also have, you know, wrenches and cone wrenches and headset presses and
all the major bike tools. And minor,
exactly. We also have some construction tools, so there sometimes is drilling happening.
Sometimes you have to fix, I'm putting that in quotes, things a little bit differently. Diana, what you were about to say?
We got chasing and facing tools this past year, which was
that's exciting.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, and for those listeners who don't know what that is, that's to help when things aren't threading right. A lot of times on older bikes or bikes that have been lovingly used a lot, things break down a little bit. So it's especially on threading, and it's something that can be fixed if you have the right tools. So it's exciting that the bike farm's got access to that stuff now, too. What about your programs? What do those look like? What did those look like? As you said, you started with the Women in Trans, and I know you also have a membership.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit more about what that is?
Yeah, so people can become a member of Bike Farm, and they can become a 1 month, a 6 month, or a year, or a lifetime member. And basically that gives you access to the shop whenever we're open, and you can have access to any of the tools and the stands and any of our advice. And all you pay is that 1 month membership. And it's $20 for 1 month and $35 for a six and $60 for a whole year. So it's a
great
deal.
Which is essentially the cost of a tune-up.
Mm-hmm.
For that $60 is about the cost of a tune-up.
Exactly.
That's
and that
amazing.
Gets you a whole year.
Wow.
And when people are working on their bikes, are you over there to assist them and sort of guide them through, or you just throw them, give them a wrench, and you're on your own?
Yeah, Diana, you had said you learned how to change a flat. Can you tell us a little bit about how that works?
Yeah. So for every shift at Bike Farm, we have at least 2 volunteer mechanics who are pretty skilled at fixing bicycles. And then that's sort of one of the lines that we have to walk with our patrons is, how much does this person want help? Do they already know what to do and they just need to use the tools? That's totally fine. Or do they actually want someone to sit with them the whole time and walk them through all the fixes? And we're down with that too. So when I learned, it was a lot of someone, you know, giving me a demonstration, me trying to do it myself and fumbling for a while, because that's how I like to do things. And then they'd come back in and check on me. And it's different for every person, but our goal is to support people in whatever way they need support.
And you talked about some really specific programs. I know currently you have the Women and Trans program. Mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners what that is? And if there's any other programs you have that are similar to it?
Yeah, Women and Trans Night happens every first and third Tuesday for 3 hours in the early evening. And it's a night specifically for people who identify as female or transgender. And all of our mechanics and volunteers that night identify as the same. So it's we've been working really hard in the past year to make this night a thriving community, and I feel like it really is now.
How many people usually show up?
A lot of times our stands are full, which means about 6 people at a time. Sometimes there's fewer, sometimes there's more.
And what's the atmosphere like?
Playful. Yeah, it's a lot of like singing and I don't know, that night is very, very special to me because we behave differently than I ever do on any of my other volunteer shifts.
That's so interesting, Momoko. Yeah, keep talking to me. I'm so interested to hear more about that.
Yeah, I just think that we feel a little bit more lighthearted and free on that night. And yeah, there's a lot of laughing and often sharing of food and a lot of storytelling, a lot of talking about our experiences while riding a bike, specifically as people who are not the norm riding the bike out there. So I think it's a great community feeling, you know, it's something very special that I haven't felt on other nights.
That's really cool. Alan?
I was recently at the Youth Bike Summit in Seattle, and one of the wonderful aspects of that very inspiring conference was meeting people from groups that usually, you know, don't ride very much, whether minorities, kids with disabilities. And it seems like what you're doing is really essential. And I liked how on the website you also talked about, you know, learning to fix things, but also building community. That seems essential. I'm wondering a little bit about, I want to hear a lot about how you operate in the collective model, but before that, just a question about bike mechanics in general. I've had a lot of experience since I've been riding since the age of 3, and you know, I noticed a great variety in styles, knowledge, attitude. What do you think makes a good bike mechanic?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. I'm curious to hear your perspective on that.
In this town, Diana? Lately, there's some mechanics with an attitude, you know, and some other wonderful,
I'm going to push back on that a lot and say there's always, since the inception of the bicycle, been mechanics with attitude. But yeah, Diana, do you want to speak to what you think makes a good, like what kind of interaction do you want to have with a mechanic?
And so when you're saying a good mechanic, you mean what are we looking for in our volunteer mechanics at Bike Farm?
Their moral development, their knowledge of sprockets, you know, everything, mm-hmm. Basically.
Yeah, all of it. We want all of it. We're all volunteer runs, so we really need people from every edge of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And the way it tends to end up at Bike Farm is that certain volunteers will have, you know, we have like the gearheads and we have the people who are really into administration thing. The different nights will end up with a different type of volunteer, and I think that's really cool.
So would you say a more well-rounded mechanic? Not necessarily well-rounded mechanic, but that your volunteer base kind of joins itself together, that different people's strengths work together?
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, we all have different things that we excel at. And that's what's great about having a collective where we all come together and we get to choose what we want to work on at Bike Farm. And therefore, we get to work on what we like to do the most. And then we all kind of succeed. And it's great. But to answer the question about like what kind of mechanic we're looking for and what kind of mechanic we value, it's somebody who's really eager to teach. Somebody who's got a wealth of knowledge that loves to share information and wants to empower people. I think the things that the mechanics that are not going to be as successful at Bike Farm are those that are really finicky about their project space. So if you have to have your tools in a certain kind of way and you have to have your workspace and I think that makes a really good mechanic in a bike shop because you're probably very, very efficient. And when you have to do things because you're getting paid and you got to get things out of the door as soon as possible, efficiency matters. But at Bike Farm, we're so much more about the fixing is the journey is right. The goal. Somebody who's very patient, mm-hmm. and somebody who's okay with going with the flow a bit. Also somebody who doesn't need to put their hands on everything and can just sit back and tell somebody.
Or maybe sit on their hands when you're watching somebody exactly. do it wrong and just let them do it wrong and then either figure it out or come turn around and say, I don't get what I'm doing. Can you help me, Momoko? Mm-hmm. Can you help me, Diana? I don't know what I just did. And you're like, oh, you turned it the wrong way. That's all. So you talked a little bit about that everything gets done because your volunteer base, kind of everybody is bringing a piece of kind of their heart or what they really are interested in. Can you talk? I'm always fascinated by like collectives and how they work. Can you talk a little bit about how the Bike Farm as a collective works? Diana?
Yeah. Well, we operate by consensus, which is a little unusual for a business, but it works really well for us. Consensus, the way we describe it is that we require the consent of all of our volunteers before making important decisions. And that generally will happen at a monthly meeting. And people, we communicate a lot on our email listserv and just in the shop talking to each other. And we hang out too, so outside of the shop talking to each other. But if someone has an idea for something that they'd like to do, then we'll generally discuss it with each other and then create a proposal at the meeting and vote on it. And yep.
So I know you have some new programs coming up. I'd like to talk about a couple of your programs because I think they're pretty special. I know there's one that's working specifically with Spanish-speaking population. Diana, do you want to talk about that one?
Yeah, we just started that this year, 2015. So it happens once a month on every second Tuesday. And it's a night specifically, it's a wrench night where the default language is Spanish. It's not English. And we've been really trying to reach out to different groups like Hacienda and the Vos Labor Day Center organization. And we're just trying to create a space in Bike Farm that's safe for people who might not feel safe in a traditional bike shop environment.
And it seems like, getting day laborer to have bicycles is very important and, enabling them to commute, to travel. Going back a minute to the collective model. So you have your meetings, you communicate electronically, meet each other. What are some of the issues that have come up where you had disagreements? I mean, do you agree about everything?
I think that the closest that we actually do agree about a lot of stuff, which is kind of amazing. For example, we had a meeting a week ago, and I think we thumbs up every single proposal. We're mostly in support of everything that people are trying to do, and we use our mission to guide us a lot. Mm-hmm. So as long as it's in line with our mission and doesn't violate our Safer Space Agreement, we're pretty much okay with going ahead with trying to do something. Times where we've disagreed, there was a discussion about moving again last summer that caused a lot of tension. We were pretty well divided, 50-50, and it was tense. It was 3 months of really long meetings, but through good facilitation, we got through it, And I remember when we voted on it finally and decided not to, to move again, there was just this weight that was lifted off of all of us. And then we all smiled and hugged and we were fine again.
Yeah.
I think, do you feel like that's, that kind of tension is actually important?
Yes. I think that it reminds us all that we all love Bike Farm, that we all, and that's the whole thing about it being, you know, a collective, is there's not one person that owns that shop or anything like that. It's all of ours, and we all care very, very passionately about it. And it's just good to see that in everybody who you're volunteering with.
And if, as you said, you know, the work you do is the journey as important as the end product, it seems that, you know, if we're going to create a different society and model, having more collectives and consensus is one of the ways to go. Mm-hmm. So,
one of the things that I'm most fascinated about with regards to this collective model is, so we've talked about how we went from a smaller space into a much larger space. We've also gone from a small group of volunteers that are needed to maintain Bike Farm to a larger group. And
What were those numbers, roughly?
Something more like 8 volunteers were needed for the previous shop. I mean, we still had the same amount of days, so we technically still needed, you know, 10, but...
You had 8. Yeah, it's good.
Exactly. And now we need much more like 15, maybe even more so, particularly as we get into summer.
And is that because of the use of the shop space? Is it because you have a bigger shop space to fill, or is it also because you're growing on the admin side?
All of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're doing way more events, which require more Bike Farm volunteers. The shop's way larger, so 2 volunteers is almost not enough. You almost need 3. Just so many different things.
And projects around the shop, too, constructing, where every single thing that happens at the shop happens from our volunteers doing it. So, you know, putting up a railing, we needed volunteers to do that in our loft area, and organizing tools and, doing inventory, everything.
Mm-hmm. What about, I know we started talking about programs. I know you've got another new program coming up this summer. Diana's this one yours, I might be wrong, but the Kids Earn a Bike program?
Yeah, there's one of our volunteers, Andrea, is organizing that, and it's a partnership with the Morrison Family Center.
And what's the goal? Is it just kids earn a bike, or is it anyone earn a bike?
It's an earn a bike program with a particular group of people. So it's a group of high school age students, and they'll come into the shop, they'll work with Andrea and another volunteer mechanic to build up their own bicycle from scratch, from Bike Farm, and we're getting all those bikes donated. They'll work on it, they'll know every single piece of their bike, and then at the end they'll get to take the bike home.
That's really, really exciting. Mm-hmm. I love that idea. I love that high school kids, getting them in early, getting them kind of on the bike, seeing the advantages of it and the freedom of it, that you don't just, not that I think in our society you kind of do need a car sometimes, but that you don't just need a car, that there's a lot of freedom you can have on 2 wheels is pretty amazing.
And that could lead also to a job in the field in the future. At the Seattle Bike Youth Summit, one of the interesting sessions was careers for kids in the bike industry, and it was very well attended by, you know, 50 enthusiastic teenagers who didn't want to go the MBA route. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you could, you know, tell us a little bit about some of the people who you met through the program, through your organization, you know, maybe some individuals that stand out as inspiring.
Yeah, who keeps you guys going? And not just, I'm sure it's your volunteers, it sounds like the collective and the community, but Momoko, you were kind of talking about the Women and Trans Night, that there was a lot of inspiration found there. Are there any particular volunteers that either of you can think of that really stand out, or moments? Diana?
Yeah, there was, well, this was just something that happened. I mean, we have so many amazing volunteers who do so many incredible things.
Or they could even be just a member.
Yeah, well, there was one moment of synchronicity that was pretty cool. And it was when so everyone's invited to participate in the organization of Bike Farm. And there was one meeting that we had where someone had come to volunteer orientation, and then they stayed for the meeting. And we were discussing all of our dreams for the shop and everything that we wanted to do. And It came up that we really wanted to have a railing on our loft area because it wasn't very safe before. And this one man who stopped in for orientation said, well, I just redid my deck and I have all this wood. Do you want it? And then he donated the wood to us. And I don't think that we ever saw him again after that. One of our volunteers, Neil, who's very skilled with carpentry, built the railing, and it was, I thought that was really cool. And things like that happen at Bike Farm all the time.
Mm-hmm. Momoko?
I mean, this is just a general one, but the amount of friends that I've made from volunteering at Bike Farm, and how I love to socialize with everybody that comes in. I mean, Diana's a very good friend now, and we've met through Bike Farm. And, you know, it's a good kind of filter for me in terms of people. People who want to volunteer at Bike Farm tend to be people who want to make the world a better place, and people who are not lazy about that. They want to go and do something. And I really appreciate that. Plus, they like bikes, so that's always a good thing. All the many friendships that I've made over the many years of volunteering, almost all the people that I really love in my life from Portland are previous Bike Farm volunteers.
And so. You mentioned dreams for the future. I mean, where do you see yourself going? Franchises all over the country, you know, more work in the community, reaching out. What is the goal and dream?
I think our focus, once we sort of settled into this space, was our outreach. And so we're working on having more programs now. And the dream would be to have so many programs, you know, workshops all the time and nights where we're catering to specific communities. And then eventually those nights just blending into all of Bike Farm. And
definitely the events. We have a large warehouse space and we love to host events. We had Bike Craft this year. We've had Repair Cafe. We had Cascadia Alliance after party, and we're going to have another Repair Cafe in May. We just love having events and opening up the space to the community. It makes it worth kind of working so hard to pay for rent for such a large space. So I think more events, more classes. Regarding franchising, I think that, you know, we definitely are not keen on making more bike farms as much as we would love to see other bicycle collectives pop up. Like recently there's one in Rosewood that just started, and so we donated a bunch of tools to them and a stand, and we'd love to see more of that happen. And when that does, you know, we would love to be kind of help seed other organizations. So, you know, if you want to start a bike collective somewhere in the near area, please contact us and we'll try to help you out.
So you just mentioned a second ago that, you know, raising the money to keep the lights on and the doors open. I know you get a lot of your money through memberships and things, but do you also sell bikes and parts? Are those available or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we fund ourselves solely from the community. We don't have any grants or anything like that. And it's about a third membership and stand time and about a third used parts and whole bikes. So we do sell complete bikes that we've worked on. And then also we have a huge amount of used parts of various different qualities. We've got a treasure chest where we keep our really nice stuff. And but then there's also the just used parts bins.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you've got a lot of streams of funding that are all kind of from you guys. It's kind of organic, and yeah, that's great. That's really excellent.
And we're actually going to have a volunteer wrench night pretty soon where we invite members of the bike community to help us build up some of our used bikes for the summertime. So if people are interested in that, keep a lookout.
Speaking of which, I really want to, we're coming to the end of this first half of the show, and it's been really great having you. But before you guys go, I want my listeners to be able to know if they want to volunteer or check out the Bike Farm, where do they go? Where can they find out more information?
We, Momoko and I host volunteer orientation, and it happens every third Wednesday from 6:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. You can drop into that, or you can email us beforehand and let us know you'll be coming if you want. But it happens during a shift, so we'll go over some of the nuts and bolts, and then you're welcome to stay after and volunteer. People can also just drop into Bike Farm anytime and say, hey, I'd like to help out. And we have a list of things for drop-in volunteers. We're very, very casual about this.
And what about if they wanted to become a member?
Oh, yeah, they can just drop in as well, and then...
They can just walk up to the door and during your hours.
During
of course,
your hours, yes. And then we'll sign them up with for a membership and give them a laminated membership card, and then there they go.
So pretty much anybody, the shop's open for everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's the goal. No barriers to entry.
Yeah, we also, if someone can't afford stand time, we'll always let them volunteer in exchange for that.
And you've inspired me. I think I'm in the category you described as people who ride their bikes all the time, but are sometimes are mystified by the simple things. So you might see me at the bike farm soon.
Nice. Cool.
And I'll definitely be seeing you both soon. Thank you to Diana Holland and Momoko Saunders for joining us on the show today. It's been a real pleasure having you with us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to the KBO Bike Show here on KBO 90.7 in Portland, and we're also on the web at www.kbofm. Please stay with us for the second half of the show when we continue our celebration of spring with top tips on getting your bike ready and running smoothly this spring. And our expert will be our very own co-host, Tori Bortman. We'd also love to hear from you, so please give us a call at 503-231-8187, and we'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. Good morning and welcome back to the KBO Bike Show. We're here at KBO in Portland, 90.7 on the FM dial and on the web also, www.kbofm, and we're also archived. The first part of the show, we spoke with two women from the bike farm, and now we'll go to another part, preparing for the next few months. Thanks to global warming and those insane weather patterns, it seems that every year spring arrives earlier. That means that for those of us who let their bicycles rest in the winter, And also for those of us who have been riding through the occasional rains, it is a good time for some special bicycle care. In this part of the show, we'll talk about preparing our bicycles for the coming months and adventures. Our guide through the maze of tune-ups and overhauls is a seasoned mechanic, author, and teacher. It would take me quite a while to do justice to her many contributions to cycling in Portland and across the nation, but suffice to mention working as a bike messenger, owning Gracie's Ranch, a bicycle education and consulting firm here in town, writing the excellent Rodale Press book, Bicycling Magazine's Big Book of Cycling for Beginners, Everything a New Cyclist Needs to Know to Gear Up and Start Riding, which is probably the longest book title I've ever heard. And last but not least, co-hosting the KBO Bike Show since 2006, our very own Tori Boardman. So good morning.
Good morning, Lon. It's really fun to have the tables turned a little bit and be an interviewee. I haven't been on the air as a bike show guest in a long, long, long time.
And so I'll try to tread carefully. And also in this part of the show, we'd like people to call in if you have any questions, comments about preparing your bicycle, any specific questions, any advice. Our phone number here is 503-231-8187.
And I think we have Roger on the line already, so I will take Roger's question. Go ahead, Roger.
Oh, it's not so much a question, except I just wanted to wish your sponsor, City Bikes, a happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, City Bikes.
Happy birthday.
And I just wanted to reminisce very briefly. Alone, when I first met you at Laughing Horse, putting up a poster for Bikes Not Bombs, you said, what about bikes for poor people in Portland? And I guess the Bike Farm is doing a beautiful job, and I love the first half of your show, and I'm going to hang up and listen to the rest of your show.
Thanks so much. And we just actually had another caller call in and ask where the Bike Farm is, and I don't have their exact address, but it's approximately 2 blocks north of Broadway, Northeast Broadway, and 2 blocks east of Williams. So it's not far from the Vancouver Williams bike path, and it's kind of in the Rose Quarter. You can find more information on their website, which is www.bikefarm.org.
While we're waiting for phone calls, 503-231-8187. Tori, what should we be doing? It's a big question.
It's a big question. So let's say let's start with the person who is maybe not been on the bike for a while, and you're looking around and you say, I live in Portland and everybody's on their bike and my neighbor's on his bike, and I'm going to pull that old bike out of the garage and get it rolling, but it's got 2 flat tires. So you bring it in the shop, and the shop airs the tires up, and that's all it needed was air. Well, often people think they need new tubes when the bike's been sitting for a long time. And that's not necessarily true. If you've got a bike pump, or if you want to go to the shop, that's a great thing too. Pump those tires up and see if they hold air for more than 4 or 5 days. Mm-hmm. If they feel the same or the pump reads the same, you have a gauge on your pump, then you know that you're in good shape. That's the 101, is having the right amount of air in your tires. And most people think that once they air them up, they're going to be good for another month. Well, not really. Once you air them up, usually I recommend that people check their air pressure in their tires every week. So,
and it's their way. I mean, when I go and put air using the pump at the store at home, there's a point where you can't go further. Oh, usually it's 90 and with my bike.
Let's talk about that point. Okay. Go ahead.
I'm kind of wondering, you know, some mechanics have told me you want it to be so strong and tight, and others leave a little air. What's your take on this?
This is a big question, and I'm gonna have a caveat with this question of saying, this is my opinion of how to do it. Everybody's got their own, and the most important thing is you should do what makes you comfortable. That's gonna be the best thing to do. If you've got really skinny road racing tires that aren't very wide, maybe less than 28C, and that's a measurement, if you're wondering, by the way, how high do I air up my tires? Where do I find that maximum inflation number? It's written, either printed in like ink on the side of your tire, or it's going to be printed, which is really hard to read, so you have to look really close, but it's printed in the rubber of the side of the tire. And it'll usually say PSI 40 to 60 max, or it might just say 90 to 110 max. But they're giving you kind of a range of where they'd like to see you. And then as far as that goes, I kind of base it on weight. So a very skinny tire, I tend to go a little bit in that higher range because it asks that the maximum be higher. For example, my road bike says 120. But what I found with it was I used to ride it at 110 and I weigh 140 pounds. And it was actually more unstable at 110. And so I started bringing it down and bringing it down and bringing it down. So now I put 95 in the back and 85 in the front. I do 10 less in the front. It's how I prefer to do it because your back is what your weight is over and your front is your steering. So you want your front tire to flatten out a little more because you want that nice traction and you don't have as much weight over it. So if you put the same in the front and the back, your front isn't going to have as big of a footprint as your back is. And you really want that steering to have a nice footprint. So I always recommend if it's a wider tire, more like a hybrid type bike or something that would be like a 1.5 if you're measuring it in inches or a probably like a 32 to a 47 if in millimeters, I would say you only want to go about a 5 pound difference between the front and the back. Again, the back being more and harder and the front being a little less. And then if it's a really fat tire, like a mountain bike, I only go about 3 difference between back and front. And then you can get into all sorts of minutia about, are you riding on the road or in gravel or this or that? But generally what I tell people is do a little bit less in the front. The best piece of advice I can give you is do a little bit less in the front than in the back.
I have a few more questions about tires, but there are other parts of the bicycle. So
Let's talk about other things. Like if you just pulled it out or maybe you've been riding it all, we're going to put that in quotes, winter. This winter has not been very wintry. Make sure you oil the chain. You should be oiling the chain every 100 miles or more if it's raining. So I get a lot of people, students in my classes that say, 100 miles. Oh, I don't ride 100 miles. And I say, okay, how far is your commute? And they say, it's only 5 miles in each direction. I say, okay, that's, if you're just commuting, that's 50 miles a week. So every 2 weeks, that would be oil your chain. And their eyes pop open wide and they say, oh, that is, and that's not including if it rains, the rain is going to wash off that oil a little bit more quickly. So you want to do it even more often if it's raining, but minimum every 100 miles. So oiling your chain and, I can recommend a few good chain lubes. I actually just wrote an article on OR Bike, that's capital O-R-B-I-K-E, on their latest issue, all about what chain oil to choose. So if you're interested in finding more about that, you can check that out on OR Bike.
And the chain itself does not need to be replaced until it's broken, right? I mean, you...
That is not right.
One of the foolish things you've heard all day.
No, that's not right. You want your chain... I think of your chain almost like as the oil in your car and the rest of your gears and sprockets and things that the chain rides on as your engine. And your chains and sprocket, your sprockets in the back and in the front, your gears in the front and back wear out more quickly than... or can last much longer than the chain does. The chain's going to wear out more quickly. For most people, if they're shifting well, and I'll explain what I mean by that, you're going to get somewhere between, and it depends on how much you weigh and how strong you are. So if you weigh more and you're really strong, you're going to wear out a chain quicker than someone who's very light and not as, going to put not as much pressure on the pedals. But somewhere, the range is usually between 1500 miles at a minimum and 1700 miles. And again, I have that person that says, well, I only ride 5 miles a day, but I ride every day. And if those people are at 200 miles a month, then they're at 2400 a year. So they're easily saying a chain a year, if not, you know, sooner, depending on how they shift. So that's, the chain is definitely one of, now another big way to get your chain life to extend longer is to oil it every 100 miles. So there's that. If you maintain your chain, it will make a significant difference. And there's a way to measure it, but the easiest way to measure it is bring it to the bike shop and they put a little tool on it and they can tell you if it's worn out or not. The interesting thing is the chain actually wears the gears out. if it's stretched out too far. So if you don't keep that chain clean and lubed and you let it go beyond a certain point of stretch, it'll start ruining the gears. So instead of just having to replace a chain, which might be anywhere between $40 and $80, you're talking about having to change the chain and usually also the gears in back, which costs between $90 and $120. So you can usually get two or three chains, like the life of two or three chains, out of every gear cluster in the back. So you won't have to change that, but every third chain, if you maintain your bike and if you shift well. So that's another thing. I see a lot of people, you know, you get to the red light and the light turns green and they stand up on those pedals to get going. And that feels good. And it's kind of when we were kids and had a single speed, it's how we learned that was the efficient way to get going. But in reality, the best thing to do is to ride your bike and shift your bike like you'd shift a car with a manual transmission. You want to shift down to a lower gear or a smaller number on your bike if you're coming to a stop. So then when you start again, it's going to be in a really easy gear and easy to take off. And then you'll click up, up, up into higher gears so that you can have more tension as you pedal faster and faster and faster. So that's one thing I see people do wrong a lot, and it actually increases the life of almost every part of your bike to do that, because you're not putting as much wear and tear on it.
You're listening to the KBO Bike Show, and I'm speaking with my co-host, Tori Bortman, extraordinary mechanic. And also I'd like to invite you, if you have any questions, comments about preparing your bike for the coming months, 503-231-8187.
One thing I want to mention that's really important, especially right now, about late February through the first week of April, Portland has this magical, magical time that happens where many of your bike shops are going to be having sales. So if you've been holding off on buying those new tires, or you know you're not quite needing new tires. Tires are just a great example because it's something people go through really quickly. You're not quite needing new tires, but you know you're going to need them in a few months. This is a great time to go contact your local bike shop. I know right now of three or four different bike shops that are having a sale either this week or next week. And stuff is on sale, especially things like tubes, tires, things that you know you're going to need at some point if you're a regular cyclist. And this is also probably one of the best times of the year to buy a bike. If you're new bike shopping, this is primo because everything's on sale at the shops. And a lot of the accessories, like if you need a rack or fenders or stuff like that, are also going to be on sale. So this is your stock up super savings window of the year, which is really, really great.
You mentioned tires, the chain. What about brakes?
About brakes and wheels. So your brakes and wheels obviously work together because the brake pad is stopping the wheel from moving. That's kind of the basic 101 of what's happening. So your brakes and your wheels, your rims on your wheels, are what wear out the quickest. Brake pads have little indents on the braking surface of it to tell you how old they are. You want to see a brake pad that looks rubbery. It shouldn't look too dirty. And those little indents should all be there and be the same level. So if you notice that the indent in the front has worn away, but the indent in the back is still there, it doesn't matter. If the indent in the front isn't there anymore, you need a new brake pad. You can also open up your brakes and take your wheel off if you're able to do that and look at the surface of your brake pad. Because as your brake works, it's actually grabbing on the aluminum of your rim. And, the aluminum of your rim, as it wears down, builds up on your brake pad. So basically, it makes your brake pad kind of shiny and hard, and it doesn't work very well or stop you very well. It's that same stuff, if you've ever noticed, when you're riding in the rain, you end up with a bunch of gray, blackish goop on your rims. And when it dries, it turns into this weird coating on your rims. That's actually a bunch of aluminum that is worn off your rim, and it builds up on your brake pads. It builds up on your rim. So wiping off your rim with a dry cloth, that's the best way to get that aluminum, it's called aluminum oxidization, off. And then to get it off the brake pads, you want to just buff it with a piece of the pad, not your rim, with a piece of sandpaper. Mm. And that's a great way. If you notice that there's little flecks of metal in your brake pad that have somehow gotten in there, replace your pads. That's another time you want to replace your pads.
And when do you go to the shop then? When do you decide that these measures are not enough? And what's the difference between a full tune-up, a partial tune-up? Okay. Seems like there are a few categories here.
There are lots of categories. So a lot of shops have something they call like a basic or quick tune-up, mm-hmm. and it'll be pretty inexpensive. It's usually $60 or less. That quick tune-up is basically them checking over your bike and making little tweaks that don't take very much time. And the best thing, honestly, if you want to find out, do I need any of the three things I'm about to describe, a quick tune-up, a full tune-up, a full overhaul, mm-hmm. take it into the shop and they'll make a recommendation. If you have not, I like to compare bikes to kitchen knives because most people have done some cooking. And if you enjoy cooking, you know that a sharp knife, there's nothing better and there's nothing safer than a sharp knife. But as you use the knife, even if you sharpen it regularly, which most people don't, you know that it gets dull, it doesn't work as well, mm-hmm. and it's not as safe. So if you want to keep your bike like you want to keep your knife, so you want to keep your bike sharp, so you want to do this regular maintenance and you want to take it in for a tune-up, I usually recommend a regular tune-up every about 2,000 miles and an overhaul every 2,000 to 4,000 miles. Mm. And the difference between the two is that a regular tune-up is going to be cable adjustments, like adjusting everything, cable adjustments, hub adjustments. If you needed a new tire or a new cable, like an actual replacement, they're going to charge you extra on top of the labor to replace that stuff. An overhaul, they take your entire bike apart pretty far down, including taking the bearings out, replacing bearings if they need it, putting fresh grease in. If you need new tires, you're still going to pay for those parts, but the charge to install the tires or the cables or any of that stuff, all the labor charges are going to be included in that full overhaul for the most part. So a tune-up is something for somebody else to get their eyes on your bike and really, really look at it and advise you. Also, please remember, if you're going to a bike shop and they're advising you that you need new parts, they're generally not trying to scam you. I would rather have a bike shop tell me that I need 8 new things and give me a timeline of how long it is before I can make it without those 8 things than to say, oh, you just need this one thing that's mm-hmm. really important. And then I go out and I ride another 3 weeks and then other 3 things I needed were never mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I come back and I said, why didn't you tell me? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, we were trying to save you money. No, I would have had you replace them when I was there. That didn't save me money or time. Now I'm back and it's broken again. So don't remember the bike shops usually, I know very few bike shops that are trying to wring money out of people. So
we have a caller on the line. Julie, good morning. Thank you for joining our show.
Thank you. Yes, I have a question about a bike rack. I have an electric bike and I'm wondering what would be the best kind of rack for that kind of heavier bicycle. I have a Honda Accord.
Julie, I'm going to be honest. I don't know, but I can point you to who would know.
Oh, good.
Wake at the e-bike store can answer that question. He's great. He's been dealing in e-bikes for, I think, the last 6 or 7 years. He's super reputable and he deals with this kind of problem all the time. And so that's the e-bike store. They're up in North Portland and you can find their number online. But yeah, he's super knowledgeable. I don't think he sells racks, but he can at least answer that question and point you in the right direction.
And Julie, I'd like to ask you, if you have a minute, what's your experience riding an e-bike? What's the difference between that and the regular old bike?
Well, my regular old bike was a one-speed Steyr that I got when I was 16. I'm a little older than that now. And I have an e-bike, and it's a pedal assist. And I like it, but right now I'm staying close to home because I don't have a rack to take it away from home, and it has a limited range.
Yes.
For charging. So that's why I'm looking for a rack.
Excellent. Well, good luck to you, Julie. Thank you so much for the call. And I hope you get out there and have some good adventures this season on your e-bike.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
If there are any other calls at 503-231-8187, we'll take them gladly. If not, Tori. Okay, so you spoke about the difference between the tune-up, the overhaul.
Yeah, the one thing I didn't mention, there's also going to be a huge cost difference. So on season in the bike world is pretty much like April, March or April mm-hmm. through, well, our season's changing right now, but generally mm-hmm. it's April through about September or October. And during those times, that's where you're going to get your shop standard rates. And the standard rates for a basic tune-up is going to be, a very basic is going to be somewhere between 40 and 60. Your quick tune-up. Your basic regular old tune-up is going to be somewhere between 60 and 100 maybe. And then and that's just a base price. That's not including if you need anything else replaced. And then an overhaul on season costs about $250. The great tip I can give people is, and this, you might have a little bit of a window left for some shops. A lot of shops offer a winter overhaul special. So if you know that your bike needs a lot of parts, or maybe you've been neglecting it for a little while and riding it a lot, but it needs some love, check out your shop and see if they have some kind of overhaul special. So instead of it being $250, it's sometimes closer to $150 or $125 to get all that labor done and all that love given to your bike. And the nice thing, the secret tip about getting your bike worked on in the winter is that the shop is much slower. Mm-hmm. And so the mechanics they're not getting interrupted by phone calls or people walking up with flat tires as much. They're able to really concentrate on your bike and really give it some deep, deep attention. So I think it's the best time because it can also save you some money.
Is there anything that could be done about the impact that I feel when I'm riding my bike over tracks, which, thank God, we have a lot of trams and
yes.
trains, but I've noticed that every time I go over it, you know, I'm a little shaking, dancing on it, and even if I slow down, what kind of impact does that have on the bicycle? Does it...
Well, the best thing you can do when you're going over anything, whether it's a curb or a pothole or a track, is to get your weight off the saddle. And it's what we call in the mountain biking world, cowboy legs and chicken wings. So you want to stick your elbows out, just as a good visual for you. So think chicken wings and think cowboy legs, meaning your knees sticking out, and get your weight off the saddle. Because as soon as you stick those, your knees out and your elbows out, you're working as a suspension system on your bike. So it makes it much easier to get over that. It's going to be, so you're going to be some of the shock absorption. So it's going to be easier on you. It's also going to be a little bit easier on your bike because you're not asking your bike to absorb all your weight.
But as you're doing this chicken dance, you're still holding the handlebars with your hand,
right?
Oh, of course.
I didn't say let go of the handlebars. Elbows out, knees out, mm-hmm. and weight off the saddle. So your mm-hmm. weight is on your pedals instead of on your seat.
Yeah. Some of us have very simple old bikes. Some of us have fancy $20,000 bikes. I'm in the first category. Is there anything different, the tips you gave, the advice, is it?
No, amazingly not. If you're using that bike, the one big difference I would say is less in the cost of the bike than how you're using it. Commuter miles, so if you're somebody that's riding your bike to work regularly, thank you, first of all. But if you're someone who's, or using your bike to go do what I call everyday cycling, your daily living, going to the store, going to the library, going to the video store, you are going to put more wear and tear on your bike than someone who's going out and riding what I would call fitness miles on a road bike or on a like on the road, not mountain bike miles. If they're fitness miles, it doesn't matter what kind. They're all rough on your bike because you're in the dirt and getting bumped around more. So your bike needs regular service. But for somebody doing fitness riding on a road bike or doing where they go out and they're riding out in the country, versus somebody who is riding and commuting every day, the riding and commuting put a lot more wear and tear on your bike, a lot more, because you're asking the bike to stop and start so much more. So you're going to be shifting more. You're going to be going through brake pads more. You're going to be going through your rims more. So even though you might think, well, I don't ride my bike that much, I don't go that far, you're probably putting more wear and tear on your bike than someone who goes. And I know people with $6,000 commuter bikes, and I know people with $60 commuter bikes. It doesn't matter what it costs. You're still going to be, I go back to the knife analogy, you're still going to be using it, and it's a tool, so you need to take care of it.
Our time is almost up. We've been speaking the second half of the show. I've been speaking with our co-host, Tori Bortman. For those interested in more information, there are wonderful mechanics in town. Tori's excellent new book with a long title, available from Rodale Press, is also a wonderful resource.
You can always contact me, too, if you've got questions through my website at Gracie's Wrench, or you can email me at graciesrench@gmail.com. If you've got questions, I love to answer questions for people and to help you out in any way I can. The most important thing is, if you're thinking, I want to mention one more thing really fast. Replace your helmet. If it's been more than 2 or 3 years, yes, even if it's only been sitting in the closet, your helmet needs to be replaced every 2 to 3 years because unfortunately they break down. They're not made out of a sustainable material and they break down. So don't just think about your bike, think about you.
I thought you were going to say our head changes or grows or shrinks.
No, that would be scary. So you have been listening to the KBOO Bike Show here on KBOO in Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. We're on the air the first Wednesday of every month. We want to say thanks to our guests today, Momoko Saunders and Diana Holland from the Bike Farm. And I want to say thanks to Alon for interviewing me today. It was a fun mix-up and change of place. Thanks for the phone calls, too. Our show is podcast and archived at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. You can also find our most recent episodes for free on iTunes. Special thanks to our brilliant podcast engineer, Josh Hetrick, to Portland Transport and Chris Smith for hosting our podcast. The Bike Show is hosted and organized by myself, Alon Robb, and Jocelyn Gowdy. Thanks to our magical in-studio engineer, Tammy, without whom we would be fumbling through the airspace. Thank you, Tammy, so much for keeping us live and in action. Make it a great day and keep riding your bike.
It's 12 o'clock noon. That's it for public affairs programming for today. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Anna, Tori mentioned that you can go to the KBOO website for archived material. The shows are automatically updated to the website daily, and you can get additional information regarding each show by going to KBOO website, kboo.fm. Thanks.